Usually when you cross a state line, the biggest change is like the speed limit or maybe just the color of the license plates, right?
Yeah, it's usually a pretty seamless transition.
Exactly. But if you step across the border into one of the 39 states that have legalized cannabis, suddenly you're existing in two completely alternate legal universes at the exact same time.
It is such a surreal dynamic because, I mean, your state might heavily tax and regulate the substance, but the federal government still considers it entirely prohibited.
Right. And that is exactly the paradox we're getting into today. Welcome to today's deep dive. Our mission here is to cut through all the political noise using a comprehensive, strictly impartial 2025 legislative report. We're just looking at the facts here.
Yeah, just the data. And what's fascinating is how the report outlines this immediate legal trap for you as a consumer.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because your state says it's perfectly legal, so you partake. But the federal supremacy clause means you can still lose fundamental rights.
Exactly. Things like access to federally assisted housing
Yeah.
or even your right to possess a firearm.
Wow. So the state shield is basically completely porous.
Yeah, it's an illusion. And that illusion of legality extends right into the economics, too. I mean, we hear these massive numbers, right? Like California generating $6 billion in tax revenue over 6 years.
Right, which sounds like a massive win.
It does. But for the actual businesses, it's a financial mirage. And it's all because of federal tax law, specifically this thing called IRS Section 280E.
Wait, I'm confused. If the state wants this tax revenue so badly, why don't they just step in and shield these businesses from the IRS?
Well, it can't. Federal tax law treats these legal state-licensed businesses as traffickers of a Schedule I substance.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that means they're totally prohibited from deducting standard operating expenses.
Wait, really? So under 280E, a legal dispensary is basically treated the same as an illicit cartel. Like they could deduct the cost of the actual product, but not, I don't know, the security guard.
Right, not the security guard, not the rent, not the payroll.
That is insane.
It's the reality. They end up paying taxes on their gross profit, which pushes their effective tax rates up to like 70%. It's financially suffocating. In Washington state, the data shows only 44% of producers even survive their first 5 years.
So what does this all mean for the legal market? If legal businesses are taxed into oblivion and forced to charge astronomical prices, doesn't that just hand the power back to the illicit market?
That is the exact causal link keeping legal prices artificially high. Black market operators don't pay taxes, they don't have compliance costs, so they win on price every time.
Because they're entirely unregulated.
Exactly. In California alone, the illegal wholesale market is valued at a staggering $7.9 billion. That's nearly 8 times the legal market.
8 times. That's
Wow.
wild. But here's where it gets really interesting. Since the regulatory framework is struggling so much, we have to look at what's actually driving this massive demand, right?
Yeah, what's making people buy it?
And the medical triumphs in this report are hard to ignore. We're seeing it treat severe conditions like refractory epilepsy in kids and chemotherapy nausea.
And with zero fatal overdoses from cannabis alone, which is a huge contrast to heavy prescription painkillers. Amazingly, some legal states even saw a 24.8% drop in opioid overdose mortality.
Right, that substitution effect is huge.
Right.
But if we connect this to the bigger picture, the report also provides a vital counterweight.
Right, because the plant is not harmless.
Exactly. High potency use is linked to cannabis use disorder, which affects like 29% of medical users. How does that actually happen?
Well, chronic exposure to high concentrations of THC alters the brain's reward system. That leads to dependency and withdrawal. Plus, there's a risk of psychosis, where high THC disrupts normal brain signaling.
And what about that vomiting condition, cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome?
Yeah, CHS. Ironically, while cannabis cures nausea, heavy chronic use can overload the body's endocannabinoid receptors. When they burn out, it triggers severe, uncontrollable vomiting.
Oh, man. Plus, there's the public safety nightmare of impaired driving. Because, as the report points out, THC is fat soluble.
Right. Alcohol is water soluble, so a breathalyzer works in real time. But THC stores in fat and releases slowly. It can stay in your blood for weeks. So law enforcement simply lacks an accurate real-time field test for immediate impairment.
It's a logistical nightmare. So if you're taking all this in as a learner, the trade-offs you're facing are immense.
Absolutely.
You're balancing economic stimulus and genuine medical relief against resilient black markets, increased municipal bond costs, and some pretty serious psychiatric risks.
And this raises an important question at the end of the report. It grounds all this data in a philosophical clash. Are we following John Stuart Mill's harm principle? The idea that you should have total individual liberty over your own body?
Right.
Or does this conflict with Thomas Aquinas's view that the state has a duty to guide society toward virtue and social harmony rather than intoxication?
It's an ancient debate playing out in modern strip malls. So, is legalization the ultimate expression of freedom or a departure from social virtue? That's a deep question for you to explore next time you drive past a dispensary operating right in the shadow of a federal courthouse.